It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
This is really an incredible story, guys. 95 years old, Yaakov Pali, landing back in Germany just a few hours ago, maybe his first time back since he left 60 years ago. 25 years after he was first confronted about his role in World War II, according to the Justice Department, he served as an armed guard at a death camp in Poland and then lied to immigration officials when he immigrated to the United States in 1949. He became a citizen in 1957. A judge revoking his citizenship and ordering his deportation in 2005, 13 years ago. After Yaakov Pali admitted to training at concentration camps and carrying out the Nazis, of course, terrible plan to murder Jews in Poland, Germany then refused to take this man back because at that point he was not a German citizen. Protesters have regularly gathered outside of Pali's home, pushing for his deportation. President Trump tasking U.S. Ambassador to Germany Richard Grenell with ensuring Pali's deportation was at the top of his list when he arrived to his post in Berlin, the White House touting the success of this, saying in part, Pali's removal sends a strong message the United States will not tolerate those who facilitated Nazi crimes and other human rights violations, and they will not find a safe haven on American soil. It is unclear if the 95-year-old former Nazi will face prosecution in Germany. But how about that, guys? And this was one of those, this was an ambassador whose his confirmation was delayed for so long, Richard Grenell. He finally gets into the post, and this is a big story.
It is a big story, and that's why I started with it. Sandy Rios with you this morning. That was Rob Schmidt on Fox News this morning, and he told you the story. Can you imagine this? Nazi has been here since 1949, has been a citizen since 1958, was deported officially in 2003. He appealed, and then they denied his appeal in 2005, and still he's here. How does that happen? Only President Trump, finally. You know, that was during George Bush's era. Nobody took care of it. Nobody did anything. And could I just point out that this Nazi was not deported because Antifa, the anti-fascist group, was outside his house banging drums or blowing whistles. And this was not a secret. This man was known about. This would have been easy to find. But, of course, this fascist, this real fascist, the one that was responsible for killing, I think, 6,000 Jews in one of the largest single massacres of the Holocaust. He was a part of that. That real fascist who actually killed people and bullied people and destroyed their lives. Antifa didn't care about him. No interest whatsoever. Instead, it's President Trump who's the fascist. It's people that support him. Those are the fascists, according to Antifa. It reminds me, so you see the absurdity of it. You just have to see. You know, I think, again, the new generation does not understand the brutality of fascism, socialism, when it happens in a totalitarian state. And the horrible record of fascist socialists killing their people in by the millions, as in Stalin, as in Hitler. It's just Mussolini. It's just an amazing story that has not been told to America's kids. So the Antifa, who think they're so smart, running around in black, yelling at the fascists, have no clue who the real fascists are. It's just kind of amazing. And maybe this could be instructive as we hear today more about the arrest of this gentleman or the deportation of this guy. They said that when he was arrested and he was transferred from his wheelchair to the truck, he cried out. So it's pretty amazing story and tragic in every way. So he's going back to Germany to be tried, and It was a priority for President Trump, and that's what he told Richard Grenell when he took the helm as ambassador in Germany, to make this a priority. So it's just amazing. The alleged fascist in the White House, you know, actually going after the real fascist living in New York, who got a pass all these years from the various presidents who have served in that White House. All right, so then the absurdity continues. The MTV Awards took place last night. Kevin Hart, who's funny, you know, funny little black man. He is a little black man. He's hilarious. He's been in so many funny movies. I've enjoyed him, too. So he gets on the stage last night, and this is what he says.
You never know what's going to happen at the VMAs. I mean, beefs pop off, bad language, people run to the bathroom and send out crazy tweets. It's basically like your typical day at the White House. And you face Trump. I'm looking at this like it's game day, people. But do not worry, because at this game, you guys are allowed to kneel. You can do whatever you want. There's no old white man that can stop you.
You know, that wasn't funny. Don't we want our comedians to be funny? What is it that they have to now, they just must take on President Trump and supporters of President Trump, and they must mock, they must become, what, I don't know, the propagandists of our age, and the humor is just gone. And so that was Kevin Hart last night, the MTV Awards, and of course they did a lot more, but I'm not even going to give them any time. They did a lot of stuff. Who cares? Who watches it? Hardly anyone anymore. And I think they need to be marginalized, and they need to be educated. They need to be educated. What is the matter with our country that people are so ignorant? Anyway, last night, there was a lot of coverage of the Catholic Church scandal, and I want to talk about that today. I'm just going to give you a taste of it. Cardinal Wuerl, who was the cardinal, is the cardinal in D.C., District of Columbia, probably one of the most prestigious positions in the Catholic Church, was before that in Pittsburgh and was involved in the cover-up of a lot of these priests that now we know they abused over 1,000 kids, 300 priests. It's just a shocking story. And just to give you a little taste of it, because we're going to get back to it in the last segment this morning, here's Cardinal Wuerl, followed by Josh Shapiro, who's the Pennsylvania Attorney General. Let's listen.
Right now, when you hear of abuse, when you hear of a case of abuse, when you hear of, they're talking about things that happened decades ago for the most part. I don't think this is some massive, massive crisis. It was a terrible disappointment.
Child rape is rape. Whether it occurred in the 1980s, 90s, or in 2018, it is never acceptable, and it is never okay to cover it up, as Bishop Zubik did and as Cardinal Wuerl did.
You notice Cardinal Wuerl used the term disappointment? It was a terrible disappointment. A disappointment? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? A disappointment that all those kids were abused sexually? That there was child pornography? That the kids were raped? A terrible disappointment? Are you kidding me? We're going to come back to that in the last segment because it's really rocked Washington. And I have to tell you, a lot of reporters and anchor people, probably you heard Brett Baer last night on Fox News. I'm going to play a couple of clips when we get to the last segment. They're shattered because this is their church. This is the basis of their faith. And they feel, as you can imagine, betrayed and confused. So we'll come back to that in the last segment. And I need to just stop. Here I go again, because I have to tell you this every day, that I, for those of you that haven't been listening to me for a long time, I am trying to get my teeth repaired from a terrible biking accident. So that's why I sound so weird. Hopefully, God willing, it won't be very many more days before I'll have something that makes me not sound quite so weird, but that's the reason. This is not a permanent state, and I apologize because I'm sure it's not the most pleasant. It's not the most pleasant for me to listen to in the headset either, but you know, time marches on, and the news continues, and we have work to do, so we can't worry about those things. You know, when I had the accident, after I realized how much damage it had actually done to my lower lip, to my ability to, you know, to speak clearly, not just the missing teeth and all the other breaks and stuff. The one thing that really encouraged me humanly, besides God himself who encouraged me, was the fact that, you know, so many people who are disabled, who lose a limb, lose their sight, lose their ability to walk, they learn to compensate. And so I said, all right, I'm going to have to learn to compensate. I'm going to have to enunciate more than I used to because it isn't as easy as it once was. So that's what I'm trying to do with you. And hopefully, again, I'll have something soon that will not be quite so distracting. All right, so I want to tell you something that's coming up, the Values Voter Summit. And if you've never been, it really is the largest gathering of conservative Christians in the country. FRC spearheads it, but the American Family Association is their partner in this. And it's taking place in Washington, D.C. on September 21st to the 23rd. It takes place at the Omni Shoreham Hotel. And, of course, this year, President Trump, Vice President Pence, Governor Matt Bevin from Kentucky, the Benham brothers, Sebastian Gorka, Mark Meadows, Jim Jordan, David Del Leiden, who did the undercover videos, Planned Parenthood, those are invited and confirmed speakers. And from American Family Association, I'll be speaking on the main stage, which is a great honor. And Abraham Hamilton will be speaking along with our vice president of governmental affairs, he is the president of AFA Action. Sorry, I'm the vice president. No, I'm the director. I'm very confused. I'm the director of governmental affairs. Rob's title is vice president of AFA Action. So anyway, Rob Chambers will be speaking as well. And Walker Wildman will be speaking at our luncheon, AFA luncheon, which takes place on Friday at the Values Voter Summit. So if you'd like to go, here's how you do it. You go to, where is that? It's valuesvotersummit.org. Valuesvotersummit.org. We'll put that on our Facebook page, but you'll have to go there to get it because, you know, Facebook is not distributing our stuff, you know? We are deplorables. Maybe it's because I lost my teeth. I don't know. They just are not distributing, putting things in your feed because that's the way they're doing us now, conservatives. Man, Twitter is on fire trying to purge conservatives, and Facebook is doing its share too. So if you, it's not funny, but I always laugh when things are not funny. I don't know why. It's a trigger in me. But it's not funny, but if you want to get the articles that we post every day, you'll need to go to Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook. Just look it up, and then you'll get all of those things, and you won't have to worry. All right. There was one other story. Oh, there's this great story. I think we have time. This is the greatest story. Benjamin Hall told it last night. Of course, it moved me because of my time in North Korea. Let's listen.
After more than six decades, families from North and South Korea, torn apart by war, finally reunited. A 92-year-old woman cried as she hugged her son for the first time in 65 years, while a 75-year-old woman hugged her brother that she was split from as a child trying to escape the Korean War.
We were separated when you were two and I was four. What happened to us? What a world. I'm so happy.
300 South Koreans from 89 families crossed into the north to see their loved ones out of an estimated 6 to 700,000 people in South Korea that have family there. The rare reunion comes after North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and South Korean President Moon Jae-in agreed to it, the first of its kind in 3 years as part of their historic summit in the demilitarized zone following a U.S. pressure campaign. Others see it as a PR stunt.
I think that this is not a coincidence. I think the North Korean government is trying to send a signal to the South Korean government and to the international community that it is willing to engage, that it is willing to behave in a different way.
For years, North Korea has used these meetings as bargaining chips. But for those families meeting loved ones after a lifetime apart, none of that matters.
As I carefully looked at his face, I could just recognize it from the past. Even if he's gotten old and has wrinkles, there is still some of him left from my memory.
Relatives will spend 3 days in the country, but only 11 supervised hours together. North Korea does not want its people learning much about the outside world.
These reunions may be positive gestures, but they mean nothing without the firm commitment to denuclearization that the U.S. wants. There is another summit coming up between President Moon and Kim Jong-un.
All right, I'm going to interrupt Benjamin. Is that not a great story? And of course, that happened because President Trump pressured North Korea to do that. It's just the most beautiful story. Coming up next, Ken Cuccinelli and the midterm elections.
The following is not an actor, but a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management.
I have
had a lot of credit card debt and I couldn't pay my bills. I was feeling so bad. I got to a point where I needed some help. So I reached out and contacted Trinity.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813 to talk to a certified counselor.
They were able to take all of my different payments and put them all together.
Trinity will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment, put a stop to late fees and over-limit charges, reduce your interest, and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands.
And they were actually able to work with my creditors. I've been able to pay off close to $15,000 in the last 18 months.
If your debt has you down, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813.
My name is Stephanie, and I'm debt-free for keeps.
1-800-788-1813.
Len Ingram of Redeem Clean felt God call him to support the American Family Association.
I'm a laundryman. I'm the son of a laundryman, too. I love clean clothes. I love the business. I love everything about it. This project was built exclusively to support AFA and AFR. There's no strings attached. Another thing that I would like to see come out of this is that I would like to see other business people feel a calling to support ministries wherever and whatever they do to share the gospel of Jesus Christ.
In addition to your regular AFA giving, Redeem Clean Laundry Detergent allows you to increase your support of AFA just by continuing to wash your family's clothes. For clean laundry and support of a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Learn more, find options, and get Redeem Clean products at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Paul Kizito. I'm a junior biology major here at Truett McConnell, and I came from Uganda. What I love about TMU is number one is the heart of, you know, of just the school and the love for God, for Christ. You can see it once you step on the campus. Like, you can see it's best, like, the foundation for TMU is Christianity.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
There's a pretty good chance a drag queen is reading nursery rhymes to your preschoolers. Public libraries across the Fruited Plain are hosting Drag Queen Storytime from Lafayette, Louisiana to Glen Burnie, Maryland. Big towns and small are exposing young children to men dressed like women. It's all part of a national movement to teach children about gender diversity. In Columbus, Georgia, local churches protested Drag Queen Story Hour, accusing the library of trying to indoctrinate young minds, which is, quite frankly, what they are trying to do. Drag Queen Story Hour started in San Francisco, spreading to other large cities, New York, Boston, and now across the southern states. While there have been critics, parents for the most part don't seem to mind that the guy reciting The Old Lady in the Shoe has a 5 o'clock shadow. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. I want you to know that today is another primary. The states are Alaska and Wyoming. Alaska and Wyoming. Now, you may not live there, but you probably know people there. And in a second, we're going to talk about what to expect in those races. Next Tuesday will be Arizona and Florida. Two very important states, Arizona and Florida. Interestingly, The Hill published a piece just this morning or yesterday pointing out that the president of the United States is undefeated in the last 14 Republican primaries. It's a bit of a winning streak. He has the approval rating of about 90% of Republican voters, which is really pretty startling. Yesterday, Steve Bannon was, I don't know when he did this interview, but it was part of a package yesterday in a news report. Steve Bannon, of course, was a strategist for President Trump. You know that. And this is what he said about the midterm elections.
This up or down vote on President Trump. You know, this election is going to come as a referendum on him. He permeates the entire political culture. And I think those that are around him are telling him that, hey, it's okay to lose the House. You can work with the Democrats and you can run against a Democratic House in 2020. It's bad advice.
All right, so that's what he said. Ken Cuccinelli, of course, watches these things and has great judgment and analysis when it comes to these races. He's the ahead of a Senate conservative spun. You know that former Attorney General of Virginia, a real champion for all of us. And I've asked him to join us this morning to talk about today's midterms and also kind of just an overview of what's happening. Ken, thanks for joining us.
Sandy, always a pleasure.
All right, so you heard Steve say that he thinks this is a referendum on the president himself. Do you agree?
Overwhelmingly, yes, but that is more motivating, oddly enough, to the left than it is to the right. On the right, we're seeing a lack of turnout relative to the left because they're motivated by their anger and hatred for the president. And on the right, we have people looking at Congress and saying, well, gosh, they really haven't done anything they promised they would do, so why should I bother? And the president is not on the ballot. So it isn't like if I go to the polls in November, I'm going to be pulling the lever for the president on the Republican side. You correctly identified his extremely high favorable ratings among Republicans, yet people don't tend to go vote for good and happy things. They go vote for angry reasons. That's why negative political ads work so well.
Yep.
And they're angry. The other side is angry. Our side is frustrated, frankly, with their own congressional leadership. So, and you've got congressional leaders like Paul Ryan and Kevin McCarthy saying, oh, you know, run on local issues. As I've heard my friend Richard Viguerie say, when the advice was given that all politics is local by Tip O'Neill, that was advice for Democrats. That was advice for Democrats. Republicans win when we nationalize the races. The president's trying to nationalize the race on immigration because of some of the crazy things that you're seeing on the left about getting rid of ICE. But the reality is the Republicans haven't done much of anything to back him up in the immigration area. Virtually nothing.
Virtually nothing on almost anything, Ken. I mean, it's almost a theme on this show. I complain constantly. You know, I've lobbied for conservatives running a slate of candidates, having like a blue ribbon group that run on the same 10 things. I can never get that to get traction, but I actually think that's what we needed for this midterm. But listen, I don't want to waste our time together on a rabbit trail. I want to, do you know what's happening with Alaska and Wyoming today? What do people need to know about those primaries today?
Well, these two are pretty quiet. I mean, you have no Senate race in Alaska this year, and in Wyoming, John Barrasso didn't end up getting challenged. He is the number five person in the Senate leadership, and you'd think Wyoming is one of the two most pro-Trump states in the country, and yet you virtually never hear his name. And I'm sure most people who are hearing us talk about John Barrasso have never heard his name, at least that they can remember, because he's done nothing. And he's from a state where you can be very conservative and go home and be popular with it, and he has not been. So I was really hoping someone would arise to challenge him. Nobody did. So he's going to cruise to reelection. And then each of these two states have one House member. They're small states population-wise, and there's no real competition there. So this is going to be one of the quieter days on the primary front, on the Republican side. Next week, as you noted, Arizona and Florida are happening. They're going to be a lot louder.
I want to talk about those, but just one comment. I've been surprised. You know, Liz Cheney is the sitting congressman from Wyoming, and she's been so quiet. Liz has never been quiet. I don't understand. I don't understand her quietness. Do you?
Well, she's not pushing hard on a conservative agenda, and she's in a very conservative state. So if I were her, I'd be quiet too, because it's my best hope for reelection.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, and the primary is the key day for them in Wyoming because it's so Republican, and conservatively so, I might add. But we could have a lot more conservative representation out of Wyoming than we do.
Yeah.
And thus, Cheney is quite quiet.
Yeah, so, she is. I don't get that. Disappointing, really. Yeah, it is. It is to me, because I thought I was all about Liz getting in there. But anyway, Art, let's talk about Arizona and Florida, because those are such big states. Let's go to Arizona first, where we have Kelly Ward and Sheriff Joe and Martha McSally.
Yeah, you've got a classic three-way here with the two conservatives splitting the vote, giving McSally a real opportunity. And she has tried to play a Trump card as if she's like Donald Trump, even going so far as to use lousy language and other things like that. It's not clear whether it's working, but there's no question that Sheriff Joe Arpaio getting in the race made it a lot more difficult for Kelly Ward. And let's be clear, that election day isn't a week from today. It's been going on for 2 or 3 weeks already. They vote all month in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And so that race has been voting for a while now. Next week is the day people go to the polls, but given their tradition of voting early, this race is already well underway as a practical matter.
Let me just interject, Ken. I was stunned to see that Martha McSally, who currently serves in the House, has an F or a low D rating by almost every conservative group in terms of her voting record. I also understand that she boycotted the Republican convention when Donald Trump won the nomination. So it's ironic that she's touting her ties and sort of hints of endorsement because he said some positive things about her military record. So she's leading with that, but that's not the reality of her record. So anyway, that's a very interesting race. Okay, Florida.
Yeah, Florida, the race, there's a lot of congressional races down there because Florida is such a large population, but also there's the governor's race, which is interesting with Ron DeSantis in it. And Ron has actually been touring or is slated to tour with Jim Jordan around the state and Matt Gaetz to both help Jim run for speaker, but also to juice up the conservative base in Florida, because these are people who conservatives actually can get behind. So it'll be interesting to see if Ron can switch from the House of Representatives to the governor's race. Rick Scott, of course, is leaving the governor's office and is running against Ben Nelson in the U.S. Senate race there, sort of a self-funding, not too conservative Republican running, but in a very expensive state. So Rick Scott does have the effect of spreading the field for Republicans by doing that. Excuse me.
You know, I was just reading some stuff about, it was Bill Nelson, right? I was just reading. You remember last week? Maybe
yeah,
you didn't,
sorry, Bill. Ben Nelson was the Nebraska Democrat.
Yeah, exactly. Ken, you were out of town last week. I know. I happen to know this. But Bill Nelson said something really dumb while you were gone. He claimed in a private fundraiser, and it's on tape, that the Russians had interfered with Florida's 2016 election, directly interfered with the election process, and later had to come out and admit that he lied about that. He was not telling the truth. So I don't know if that's going to hurt him in the race, but it is one factor that's happened over the last few weeks.
Well, it does, at least in the short term, it puts him on defense. It also puts him in the president's crosshairs. You know, that given the favorability the president has with our base, it is helpful for him to get behind a candidate for that candidate, in this case Rick Scott. We'll see how much Rick Scott embraces that. But and look, Florida was a very close state. I think the president won it by 1% or so, 1 or 2%. I don't remember my exact numbers. But and we have seen that Trump voters aren't turning out at the same level as Hillary voters. For instance, in that Ohio special election, 50% of the people who voted for Hillary Clinton showed up, 30% of the people who voted for Donald Trump showed up. If those numbers hold through November 6th, it's going to be a wipeout of epic proportions on November 6th. So if our folks don't start showing up, then you're going to lose the House big. You won't lose the Senate, but we'll lose the House big.
You know, one of the other things that Steve Bannon said in that opening clip, it wasn't only that this was a referendum on President Trump. Steve gave a warning about President Trump losing the House, or the Republicans losing the House, about the dangers of that. In your own mind, in your own words, what would happen, practically speaking, if the Democrats won control back of the House of Representatives?
Well, you'd have 24/7 investigations going on of every cabinet member, of the president. You know, they'd reopen the House Russia investigation. And one of the things we're seeing with Paul Manafort and George Papadopoulos and these people who are coming to a conclusion with the special counsel is that there are zero collusion allegations, none. We all know the Russians were trying to mess around in the election, but that's item one. Item two was there collusion between the president's campaign and Russia? And it's rather obvious at this point there was none. The most likely colluder was Paul Manafort, who did years of work for pro-Russian Ukrainian politicians. I mean, that pipeline was established. And, if the Russians were going to try to make a play somewhere, he's the guy they would have done it through. And yet we're in day four of jury deliberations. He's already been tried for the things he did wrong or allegedly did wrong. We'll see if the jury thinks he did them wrong. But they had nothing to do with the election. They were from years before his work as chairman of the Trump campaign or campaign manager. And George Papadopoulos was charged with lying to the FBI rather foolishly. I mean, he's now trying to withdraw his plea. But in the recent sentencing report, we saw there was no there. You know, mm-hmm. You remember all the hysterics by the media. Oh, you know, here's this guy we've discovered. It's the key to this and that. No, yeah. There's nothing there.
No.
And the prosecutor's own sentencing report demonstrates that. So, but just like with Bush in 2000 and 2004 when he won Florida, you remember the bumper stickers, re-defeat Bush. I mean, the left isn't letting go of it. Mm. And it is motivating them to come out. And if they win the House, it'll be wall-to-wall investigations. There'll be very little legislative accomplishment. Though, sadly, the Republicans can't really say, wouldn't it be terrible to bring all this legislative accomplishment to an end? Because they don't have any.
Yeah.
They have a tax bill. That's it in two years.
Exactly. Under Paul Ryan's leadership, which is why so many of us are working hard to get Jim Jordan elected Speaker of the House.
It would make a big difference.
Yeah.
Make a big difference.
Ken, before we run out of time, let me repeat that Ken is the president of Senate Conservatives Fund, and they are in the business, of course, of funding conservative candidates all around the country running for Senate. And their website is senateconservatives.com, senateconservatives.com. And Ken, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you to sort of any prediction of what you think is going to happen in the Senate in the November election. You think we're going to turn?
Yeah, on the Senate side, the map is so good. The Democrats are defending 10 states that Donald Trump won. And we have, at Senate Conservatives Fund, we don't endorse a candidate who isn't a cross-the-board solid conservative. And if that means we only endorse one candidate in an election cycle, that's what we ended up doing in 2016. We never drop our standards. But we have seven candidates we're behind in this cycle. It is just an extraordinary opportunity for conservatives. So there's good news on the Senate side. I think we'll pick up at least two or three seats, and I think they'll be with conservatives. So with the caucus will get more conservative, and Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski are going to lose some of their leverage because I think they'll get up to 54 or 55 Republicans. And like I said, the caucus will become more conservative. Mike Lee, Ted Cruz will get some reinforcements, which will be good for America.
That would, and if Ted Cruz can hang on to his seat in Texas, which is another story we should talk. We'll talk about that before the November election. Ken Cuccinelli, Senate Conservatives Fund. Ken, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you real soon.
Alrighty. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, Sandy Rios with you in the morning on AFR Talk.
They said to each other, "Did not our hearts burn within us while he talked to us on the road, while he opened to us the scriptures?" My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. These words were shared between Cleopas and his companion on the 7-mile walk from Jerusalem to Emmaus as Jesus, in resurrected form, used the Hebrew scriptures to reveal himself to them as the Messiah. There are at least 109 distinct biblical prophecies the Messiah had to fulfill. The mathematical probability of such a feat occurring is astoundingly absurd, yet that absurdity is satisfied in Jesus, the Messiah. Come, let us adore him.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner. For more, from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with the Life and Liberty Minute. A study done in 2002 at the request of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops indicated that 80% of the abuse cases in the Catholic Church involve male-on-male predation, a clear indication of the connection between homosexuality and pedophilia. Leading Catholic voices are determined to do something about it. The Catholic Bishop of Madison, Wisconsin, said Saturday, "It is time to admit there is a homosexual subculture within the hierarchy of the Catholic Church that is wreaking great devastation in the vineyard of the Lord." Conservative Catholic Michael Hitchborn says there must be a, quote, "complete and thorough removal of all homosexual clergymen from the church," end quote, even if it results in a severe priest shortage. May God guide such leaders as they seek to clean up their vineyard.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
When our health insurance renewal notice arrived last fall, my wife and I made the decision to drop our plan. With the monthly premiums and deductible, we'd have to pay $30,000 just to use it. So we did our homework and switched to MediShare. The cost savings are incredible, over $500 a month, and we don't have to pay for services we don't need or don't agree with. Then, out of the blue, she had to have emergency surgery. Scary stuff. $150,000 in hospital bills, and MediShare members took care of everything. All we paid was our small portion. I'm a doctor who's been in healthcare for 20 years, and this is one of the most impressive programs I've ever seen. Thank God she's fully recovered. And now we're telling everyone about MediShare.
Call 855-PSALM-23 to find out how much you can save on your healthcare. MediShare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Suddenly, everyone is talking about security clearances, but hardly anybody is talking about security. The fact that John Brennan got a clearance despite his vote for the Stalinist leader of the American Communist Party for president in 1976, and his longstanding admiration for and lying about the no less totalitarian practices impelled by Islam's Sharia, is a scandal. Ditto, clearances received by James Comey, who has publicly declared he was a communist, and Huma Abedin, who, together with her family, ran a Muslim Brotherhood front group. No background checks are performed on radical leftists and Islamists in Congress, yet they can have access to highly classified information. And a recent Treasury Department review suggests that hundreds of thousands of current government employees have received clearances without a proper background investigation, yet pose a moderate to critical risk. It's time to make security secure again. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Right now, when you hear of abuse, when you hear of a case of abuse, when you hear of... They're talking about things that happened decades ago for the most part. I don't think this is some massive, massive crisis. It was a terrible disappointment.
Child rape is rape, whether it occurred in the 1980s, 90s, or in 2018. It is never acceptable, and it is never okay to cover it up, as Bishop Zubik did and as Cardinal Wuerl did.
Well, I wanted you to hear that again. Cardinal Wuerl, of course, is the cardinal of the diocese in District of Columbia, which I really think, besides maybe New York City, is probably the plum position for Catholic cardinals in this country. That's my surmising. I'm not Catholic. Cardinal Wuerl has been on Fox often. He's kind of gray-haired. You've probably seen him white-haired. And so he's under attack because before he was in D.C., he was the bishop in Pittsburgh, where the AG, who that was Josh Shapiro, the AG from Pennsylvania, released that report last week. Just stunning, really. Stories about how they would identify little boys they had molested with special crosses so that other priests could see who'd been groomed for abuse. I talked about, it's so graphic, it's so horrible, really, the things in that report, the ritual. Let's just say rape of young boys was just amazing. And the creation of child pornography among Catholic priests. There were 300 priests they identified, at least in Pittsburgh, in Pennsylvania, and 1,000 kids. And you can imagine it's probably worse than that because those were things that happened in the past. But it's not so distant that people don't remember. I mean, that scars you for life. If anything scars you for life, it's sex abuse. It really does. True sexual abuse. I'm not talking about someone hugging you too long. I just abhor the way the term sexual abuse has been bastardized so that it does not mean when it's horrendous, which it is horrendous. I was talking with my husband last night that it violates your soul. It's not just your body. And it can damage, except for the blood of Jesus and the healing that he brings, it can damage you for life. And so this is a problem. Let's just say a huge problem. You notice that Bishop Wuerl, what he said, it was a terrible disappointment? Terrible disappointment. I noticed the Pope's statement on this. I was reading this. It says, with shame and repentance, he sent a letter out to all Catholics worldwide. With shame and repentance, we acknowledge as an ecclesial community that we were not where we should have been. We were not where we should have been. That we did not act in a timely manner. Realizing the magnitude and the gravity of the damage done to so many lives. Really? We showed no care for the little ones. We abandoned them. That's what Pope Francis said. You know, I would just say that Pope, I'm realizing that these guys are taking a very passive, they describe it very passively. And by these guys, I'm talking about Catholic leaders. I'm going to give you an example of another one in just a second here. You know, they're talking about sins of omission. We were not where we should have been. We didn't act in a timely manner. We didn't realize the magnitude. We showed no care. Those are sins of omission. We're talking about sins of commission. Sins, egregious, horrible sins, committed before God, and worse, by men who were supposed to be representing God here on earth. I mean, it's just a violation in every sort of way. Now, Bishop Zubrick is the bishop in Pittsburgh. He was on with Brett Baer last night, and this is a little of a montage. It wasn't him with Brett last night. This is on other outlets, things that he said. Let's listen.
First of all, I want to say that there was no cover-up going on. We have, over the course of the last 30 years for sure, been transparent about everything that has in fact been transpiring.
I was a little bit surprised to hear after my first answer to our news conference on Tuesday that I was somehow part of the cover-up.
But how about rage? Because I'm feeling it too. I was ordained a priest 43 years ago, and the collar that I wear is a source of pride for me. And the fact that I know that some of the people who served with this collar abused people makes me enraged.
All right, there was no cover-up, but now he's enraged. It's just, and he didn't sound enraged to me. I'm sorry. I'll tell you who sounds enraged. I want to play you just one person. It was Mark Thiessen last night on Brett Baer's panel. I know Mark from D.C., Mark has been around for a long time. He's a conservative pundit, writer. He writes for the Washington Post right now. He's Catholic, and this is what he had to say last night.
So I'm glad the Pope wrote a letter, but the one word that was missing in that letter was accountability. We don't need words. We need actions right now in the Catholic Church. He said that he quoted Pope Benedict saying how much filth there is in the church and talked about those who kept quiet or silenced the victims. One of those people who silenced the victims was your guest, Bishop Zubik. He was, from 1987 to 91, the personal secretary to Bishop Bellavacqua. He was then the director of clergy personnel from 91 to 96 for Archbishop Wuerl when he was the Bishop of Pittsburgh, when all these confidentiality agreements were being signed, when all these predator priests were being moved around. He was at the epicenter of this crisis. He pointed that cross on his lapel. You know what Christ did on that cross? He sacrificed himself. I'd like to see one of the 100 bishops in this country sacrifice themselves, saying, mea culpa, mea maxima culpa, and I say to my other fellow bishops, step down and let new leaders take over.
Now that's rage, and that's passion. That's what's missing from the Pope, and that's what's missing from the leaders of the church that I've heard. I'm not saying all of them. I'm sure that some of them do share Mark's feelings about this, but not enough of them, not the ones that are speaking out right now. There should be, as the Bible terms it, godly sorrow that leads to repentance. That's when your heart is breaking and you are on your knees in repentance. You are not trying to make excuses. That's not what we're seeing. And so it was amazing to me, though, last night, Brett Baer was very moved himself. He said publicly, I'm a Catholic, as he was trying to interact with Bishop Zubrick. Bishop Zubrick claimed that he had, you know, if you'd heard just Bishop Zubrick's comments with Brett last night, you would think that nothing really happened. It was a long time ago, and under his leadership, they took care of everything. And yet you heard what Mark said just now. That's just not true. Bishop Zubrick was at the epicenter of that. So you got Brett Baer, Roman Catholic. You've got Mark, who's a writer in D.C. Listen, there are countless. The Catholic influence in D.C. is powerful. Most of the, I think all of the, I wish I could talk better, but I can't. Most of the Supreme Court justices, conservative, are Catholic. I think a lot of the liberal justices are Catholic as well in their tradition. A lot of Protestants, even, I remember, Sam Brownback from Kansas converted to Catholicism. So did Newt Gingrich in D.C. There was a very strong intellectual power base that appeals to Washington intelligentsia in the Catholic Church. The good thing, the thing that they do that evangelicals don't do as well, I think this is true, they do scholarship, they study. They're serious scholars, and that appeals to the thinkers of Washington. Doctrinally, of course, I could go into the major differences in the problems, but that's not the purpose of this discussion. But so I just want to give you background. Catholicism affects in profound ways the news that you hear, the news that's covered, because so many of the pundits are Roman Catholic. Even if they don't, you know what I'm trying to get. They're not necessarily serious in terms of their personal conduct, but they go to Mass. And so one person that really stood out to me yesterday, and I want to play you his complete report, Jake Tapper from CNN. Jake was profoundly moved himself, and he gave quite a lengthy report that I want to play for you, kind of spelling out Cardinal Wuerl, the cardinal now in D.C. His part in this. Let's listen. Here's Jake Tapper.
This Sunday morning is the first Mass here since this shocking Pennsylvania grand jury report detailing allegations of widespread predatory behavior by more than 300 priests against more than 1,000 children. I'm standing here at St. Matthew's Cathedral because before Donald Wuerl, the powerful cardinal of the Washington Diocese, was hosting popes in this town, he was bishop in Pittsburgh for 18 years, and he was named throughout this report as one of the bishops who helped cover up the crimes. The Archdiocese declined our invitation to interview Cardinal Wuerl, but this week in his defense, the cardinal said, quote, "The report confirms that I acted with diligence, with concern for the victims, and to prevent future acts of abuse," unquote. The Pennsylvania Attorney General, Josh Shapiro, well, he disagrees, telling me exclusively, quote, "Cardinal Wuerl is not telling the truth. Many of his statements in response to the grand jury report are directly contradicted by the church's own documents and records from their secret archives." Among Wuerl's claims that do not stand up to scrutiny,
"I think I did everything that I possibly could."
Everything? Father Richard Zula and Father George Zerwas of the Pittsburgh Diocese were two from a group of priests who, the grand jury found, quote, manufactured child pornography, end quote, used whips, violence, and sadism in raping their victims. In 1988, Zula was arrested and charged with more than 130 counts related to child sex abuse. Now, a spokesman for Wuerl notes that Zula had been removed from his ministry before Wuerl came to Pittsburgh in early 1988, and that's true. But in 1989, Cardinal Wuerl authorized a $900,000 confidential settlement between the diocese and two of Zula's victims, and that included a hush agreement. The diocese, under Wuerl's leadership, also hired a doctor who worked with Father Zula to lessen the sentence with a statement that the grand jury found, quote, blamed the child victim rather than the adult criminal. And the diocese under Wuerl helped to secure Zula's early release.
All right, Jake Tapper, that's just the first part of his report. But you can hear the angst. It's personal to him. It's personal to Mark Teason. It's personal to Brett Baer. It was interesting when Brett interviewed Bishop Zubrick last night. Brett asked him the question. He said, well, are any of these people still in the church? Are they still there? Have they been purged? Are they gone? And Bishop Zubrick first acted as though he didn't understand the question. Brett asked it again, and then Bishop Zubrick gave him an answer to a question he did not ask. He never answered the question. And I think that's part of the problem. The priests were moved around. That was covered up. The accusers were paid off. And retribution was not given. Punishment, church discipline, according to Scripture, was not applied. I want you to hear the rest of Jake's report. Here it is.
Did you ever move priests quietly to another?
That wasn't our process.
Actually, it was the process with Father George Zerwas. The Diocese of Pittsburgh under Wuerl, who started there in 1988, quote, was aware of complaints against Zerwas for sexually abusing children as early as 1987. Additional complaints were received between 1987 and 1995, and that includes in 1988 and 1991, while Wuerl was bishop of the diocese, quote. However, Zerwas continued to function as a priest during this period and was reassigned to several parishes, unquote. Despite all this evidence, a spokesman for Wuerl maintains that he acted promptly in this case and removed Zerwas.
If there were allegations, we dealt with them immediately.
Immediately? Really? The predatory behavior of Father Ernest Paoni dated back to the early 1960s. And Paoni was shuffled from parish to parish all over the country. In 1991, Cardinal Wuerl approved moving Paoni to the Diocese of Reno, Las Vegas, even though the Pittsburgh Diocese knew of Paoni's past. And in 1996, Wuerl refrained from sharing everything the Pittsburgh Church knew about Paoni's past with the Diocese of San Diego. Now, Wuerl's defenders note that as bishop in Pittsburgh, he disciplined some priests and he fought the Vatican against an order to reinstate a predator priest. The report notes that Wuerl had previously written to the Vatican that parishioners had a right to know if their priests were pedophiles. And a spokesman for Wuerl says he acted promptly to notify others about the claims against Paoni when he learned of them. But the grand jury disagreed, writing, quote, in spite of Wuerl's statements to the Vatican, the clear and present threat that Paoni posed to children was hidden and kept secret from parishioners in three states.
I'm going to interrupt, Jake. It's just amazing. And I want to say this because it's important. The church is not the pastor or the priest. The church is based on the blood and sacrifice of the Son of God, Jesus Christ. That's who we have faith in. It isn't the people. The people are filled with sin. They have been since the beginning of time. And that doesn't mean no one can be trusted. It just means that men are fallen. I think the problem with the Roman Catholic teaching is that they teach people to have faith in the church. And you can't have faith in the church. You have to have faith in Jesus, because he is the same yesterday, today, and forever. He will never disappoint. He will redeem. So I would encourage all of you who are Catholic to look to Jesus, look to Scripture, and also then help bring about the healing of your priests and hold them accountable, because they will never heal until they are held accountable for the sins that they have committed against your children. Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family